Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
It's November the 15th, and we are in Malachim, and we're tying things together. This is the second part of that process. It'll take a few more weeks. Now, last time, we introduced the connection of the destruction of the city of Nov with the destruction of David HaMelech's family. And we also highlighted the struggle between Rus and Arpa, and that the first time that you have the clash between Rus and Arpa comes between David and Goliath, but then we described the struggle between David and Yishbi Benov and how Arpa herself was killed during that struggle. We're going to go back to an episode that we had not explained last time we did it. It was, you'll recall, there was an episode that had happened and I had said we would cover it in the next class. And then Shavuos came around and we never did it. And an alert listener pointed out we never came back to it. Now we're going to cover it. And in so doing, we're going to tie together some of these points. Now, tonight we're going to come out with some degree of understanding of what Nov has to do with anything over here and Rus and Arpa. We still have a few more threads that have to be brought together in the story that are going to tie in as well. But we're going to get to some degree of conclusion tonight, I hope. Now, in Perek Beis of Malachim Beis, chapter 2, at the end of the Perek, Elisha is returning from having seen Eliyahu HaNavi go up to Shamayim, and then having healed the water of Yericho was killing the people who lived there. And he fixed the water. The water was dangerous. It was making people sick. And then he took salt, put it in the water, and made the water better. Then it says at the end of the parak, starting Pasuk Chav Gimel, verse 23, it says, Vayam Yisham Beisel, he went from there to Beisel, V'hu Olev Aderech, he was going up on the road, U'na'arim Kitanim Yatsu Mina'ir, and there were young Na'arim, a Na'ar means a young man, a Katan means a child, so that is contradictory. They came out of the city, because I'll say they were nu'urim mina mitzvos, that they were empty of mitzvos. Vayis kalsu vo, and they made fun of him. Vayomulo, they said to him, alei kereach, come up, bald one, come up, bald one. Referring to Elisha as the bald one, it was degrading. As we've mentioned, when we learn this, that would be comparable to meeting the Gadol Hadar, the greatest sage of the generation, and openly making fun of him. It was a tremendous chutzpah. Va'yivan acharav, he looked behind him, which Chazal say means that he looked and saw that there was nothing good that would come out of these young men. He saw that with his Ruach HaKodesh. Va'yir'eim, and he saw them, va'yikalaleim, and he cursed them, Hashem Hashem, with the name of Hashem. Vateitzena shtaim dubim minayar, and two bears came out of the forest. Chazal say this was a nes besoch nes. It was a miracle inside of a miracle because there was no forest. And a forest instantly grew up, and out came two bears. You needed the forest because bears are more likely to be aggressive when they're near their natural habitat. Vativakana mehem arbaim mushnei yeladim, and they tore up from them 42 young men. So the bears killed 42 of them. Vayelech misham al Harak Karmel, he went from there to Harak Karmel, misham shav Shomron, and then he returned to Shomron. So Elisha curses the young men, and 42 of them are torn apart by the bears. We will, when we get later on to the end of Elisha's life, we'll discuss, Mitzvah Hashem, this episode and what the consequence of this episode is to Elisha himself. But right now, we're not concerned with that. We are concerned with these 42, the number of 42 young men, that they were bad people and that they were destroyed here. That number 42.
Question.
Yeah.
Is there very many places where somebody can actually use God's name to curse someone?
I'm sorry?
Is there very many places that can be thought of where somebody can actually curse in God's name?
Someone can or did?
I can.
I don't know if they can or can't.
It didn't happen often.
Isn't it that he brought that forward?
I don't know. Could be. Could be.
Do you know how many children they were to begin with?
No.
Young men or
no.
Whatever they
No, are? That's not going to be relevant to tonight's discussion. Now, so 42 of them were killed. Now we covered this story at the time. We went through it and a lot of the details of it, but we're dealing now with a specific part of it. Then number 42, you may recall, if you jump ahead to Perek Yud, chapter 10, when Yehu is consolidating his kingdom, wiping out the family of Ahav, then he also kills Ahaziyahu, the king of Yehuda. And then Yehu finds the brothers of Ahaziyahu, or perhaps the nephews. So it says in Perek Yud chapter 10, Pasuk Yud Gimel, verse 13, V'yehu matzas achi Ahaziyahu melech Yehuda, Yehu found the brothers or the nephews of Ahaziyahu, the king of Yehuda. V'yomer mi'atem, he said, who are you? V'yomer, they said, achi Ahaziyahu, anachu, we're the brothers of Ahaziyahu. We came to see the shalom of the sons of the king, meaning of Achav's family, of Yehoram ben Achav, and Bnei Agvira, meaning of Izevel. We came to see about the shalom of them. So right away, as we mentioned when we learned this, they said the wrong thing, because Yehu was in the middle of destroying Achav's family, and they were saying how they came to see about the shalom of Achav's family. Vayomer, so Yehu said, Tifsum Chayim, catch them alive. Vayispesum Chayim, he caught them alive. Vayishchatum, and he slaughtered them. El Bor Beis Eker, to the pit of Beis Eker. Arboim Ushnaim Ish, 42 men. Velohishir Ish Mehem, and there were no men left of them. So again, the number 42 people who are killed. The fact that the Navi emphasizes how many there are means that the number is significant. We know that the Moabi country, nation, and the Ammoni nation are not allowed to marry into the Jewish people. And we know that this is because, as the Pasuk itself tells us in Parshas Kisetze, Advar Shalokidmo Eschem Balechem Muvamayim Baderech Betzeschem Mitzrayim, that they did not bring forth to you bread and water when you came out of Egypt. So they did not show chesed to you, to the Jewish people. They didn't show hakaras hatov. They should have, knowing that they only existed because of Avraham Avinu, they should have therefore helped us when we left Egypt. They did not. And not only did they not show gratitude and chesed towards us, Vasher Sachar Lachas Bilam Ben Ba'ar, they hired Bilam to curse us. That's what they tried to do. And therefore, lo sidro shlama mitovasam, you shall not seek their peace nor their good. And you can't, we don't want them. They are off limits. They are abhorrent to us. And it says, because of that, lo yavo amoni umoavi bikal Hashem. An Ammon person and a Moab person cannot marry into the Jewish people. We know that that means amoni velo amonis, moavi velo moavis, that it is only the men who are prohibited, but the women can marry in, and that is how come Rus and Naama are able to marry into the Jewish people. We know that this issue of the men and not the women was debated, that there were those who argued, Moaviva filu Moavis, that the women were also prohibited from joining the Jewish people. Now, this debate we've discussed before, and we're now going to discuss it much more in depth and drill down to exactly what this debate is about. because that is what everything that we learned last week and what we're learning this week is going to hinge upon, is what is this debate of Moavi vafilu Moavis, the males and even the females, or including the females, or Moavi velo Moavis, the males but not the females. What does that hinge upon? Now, before we do so, I want to point out to you that when Bilam, when Moav hired Bilam to curse the Jewish people, Balak was the king of Moav, and he tried to get Bilam to curse the Jews. As you know, Bilam tried three times. Each time that he tried, Hashem turned the klala, the curse, into a bracha, into a blessing. But when he did so, Bilam gave Balak instructions for what to do in order to be able to curse the Jewish people. Now, Bilam was not reaching out to pagan deities and to false gods. Bilam was reaching out to Hashem himself to curse the Jewish people. And therefore, he instructed Balak to bring karbanos, to bring sacrifices to Hashem. Not pagan sacrifices, but sacrifices to Hashem. And therefore, Balak actually offered sacrifices to Hashem himself. What did he tell him to bring? So he told him that you should construct seven altars, and upon those seven altars, you should bring seven bulls and seven rams. And he told them to do that for each of the three attempts to curse the Jewish people. So for the first attempt, there were seven bulls and seven rams. That's 14. The second attempt, seven bulls and seven rams. That's 14. And the third attempt, seven bulls and seven rams. That's 14. 14 times 3 is 42. Chazal tell us that the reason why there were 42 young men that Elisha cursed and were killed by the bears is because of the 42 karbanos that Balak brought. Now, that in itself needs explanation because Balak is from Moav, and he brought those 42 karbanos, and these young men are Jews who degraded Elisha and were killed. So that connection is very difficult. Moreover, it's difficult because Balak was bringing karbanos to Hashem. Why should that cause that there be this evil in the Jewish people? It sounds like Chazal are saying that because of the karbanos that Balak brought, that even though he was unsuccessful in getting the Jews to be cursed, but he was successful in that later on in history there would be 42 casualties amongst the Jewish people, one for each of the karbanos that were brought. That's what it sounds like Chazal are saying. But that's a difficult connection. What does one thing have to do with the other? And why now in the time of Elisha, so many years later, what's the relevance of that? Moreover, there seems to be a conflicting Chazal. You know, the rule is that we're supposed to serve Hashem and do mitzvahs, learn Torah, lishma. Lishma means for the sake of heaven. We're not supposed to do it for ulterior motives. Of course, we're human beings, and therefore we always have ulterior motives, and we often have multiple motives why we do things. We try to do things as much l'shem shamayim, for the sake of heaven, as possible, but often we have other reasons as well. There's peer pressure, and there's reputation, and there's that we like to do the mitzvah, it makes us feel good. There's all kinds of reasons why we do mitzvahs besides for Hashem. The Chazal say, "La'olam yasa gadam b'torah mitzvahs shelo lishma." A person should always be involved in Torah mitzvahs, even if it's not for the sake of heaven. Shemitoch shelo lishma, ba lishma, because from doing it not for the sake of heaven, it'll bring you to do it for the sake of heaven. So that's a good thing. The person shouldn't think it's worthless because I'm not doing it for altruistic reasons. No, it's very valuable because it'll bring us to the good reasons. Fine. Chazal proved this from a couple of different places. One of them is from these karbanos that Balak offered. As Chazal say, that because of the 42 karbanos that Balak offered, from him comes Eglon, the king of Moab, And from him comes Rus. And from Rus comes David and Shlomo. And David and Shlomo offered thousands of karbanos to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So as a merit for having brought 42 karbanos, Balak deserved that he would have a descendant that would offer thousands of karbanos to Hashem. But when Balak brought his karbanos, it was not l'shem shamayim, meaning it wasn't for the sake of heaven, even though he offered karbanos to Hashem. They weren't pagan offerings. They were real offerings. But he had ulterior motives. His motives were, in fact, very bad motives to curse the Jewish people. Nevertheless, you see that even though it was shalo lishma, it was not for the sake of heaven, but that still can bring to lishma, can bring to for the sake of heaven. And therefore, he merited that later on there would be a descendant who would offer thousands of karbanos to Hashem. So these two statements in Chazal seem to conflict. On the one hand, we're saying that there was a very bad thing that came out of these karbanos, that later on in history, 42 Jews would be killed because of these karbanos. And on the other hand, it seems to be a good thing that the 42 karbanos lead to David and Shlomo, who would offer thousands of karbanos. Okay. Now, when Moav did not bring bread and water. Now, I'm going to repeat a Gemara to you that we've gone through in the past, and you've probably heard it in other contexts as well from other speakers, but it's important to get this very clear to fully grasp what is happening over here. So, they did not bring bread and water to the Jewish people. So, because of that, they're condemned. They cannot ever marry into the Jewish people forever. They're off limits forever. So, in the time of David HaMelech, David came to fight Goliath. As we said, that's the first clash between Rus and Arpah. David comes to fight Goliath. When he does so when he goes out to fight, Shaul says to Avner, his general, he says, "Mi ze ha'elem? Who is this young man?" Now Chazal say, it can't be that Shaul didn't know who it was. He knew who David was. David had been with Shaul many times before. He used to play the kinar for Shaul when Shaul would have his bouts of ruach ra, of the evil spirit. And David would play for him, and he, of course, knew who he was. In fact, and David's father, Yishai, was a very famous Jew. It was well known who David was. So what was he asking? Who was this young man? So the answer, Chazal say, is the following. When David came to fight Goliath, he was unarmed. He also had no armor. He wasn't dressed for war. Shaul took his own armor, the royal armor, and put it on David. But that would be very ill-fitting because David was a normal-sized human being and Shaul was not a normal-sized human being. Shaul was a tall, strapping individual. Mishikmo v'mala gavo mikolam, from his neck and up, he was taller than the whole nation. He was a very, very tall, powerful person. Even though David was also very strong, but David didn't have that tall stature, right? So the armor should not have fit David. It should have been a very poor fit. But when he put it on David, it miraculously changed and fit David. So David took off the armor because David saw that Shaul was troubled by this. Shaul had already been told by Shmuel that he was going to lose the kingship. And he got scared and thought that this was a sign that David is the one who will become the next king. Because since the king's armor changed its size to fit David, that he thought was symbolic of the fact that David is in fact the king, which is correct. That it was a correct interpretation by Shaul. David saw that Shaul was upset, so he took off the armor and he went and fought Goliath without any armor. And of course, as you know, he beat Goliath. So when he was going out to fight Goliath, Shaul said to Avner, "Mi ze ha'elem? Who is this young man?" Meaning, what line in Yehuda does he come from? We know that Yehuda and Tamar had two sons. They had twins, Peretz and Zerach. The kings come from Peretz. They do not come from Zerach. So he asked Avner, go check out the line of David, which is the line of Yishai, and tell me, does it come from Peretz or Zerach? If it comes from Zerach, I have nothing to worry about. But if it comes from Peretz, then I know that he is in the line that is fit to become king, and then I am concerned that he is that one. But Doeg, who was also there, said to Shaul, before you ask whether this young man is fit to be king, why don't you ask whether this young man is fit to be part of the Jewish people at all? Maybe he's not even fit to be part of the Jewish people. Why? Because he comes from Rus. Yishai is the son of Oved, who's the son of Boaz, and Boaz was married to Rus. And Rus is a Moavi, a Moavis, and the Moavim are not allowed to join the Jewish people. Therefore, David, maybe he's not even fit to be part of the Jewish people, let alone king. So Avner said back to Doeg, that's not true, because it's Moavi, v'lo Moavis. Only the males are banned from the Jewish people, not the females. To which Doeg said, no, it's Moavi v'afilu Moavis. It's the males and the females are banned. So Avner said back to Doeg, but the Pasuk says the reason why they're banned is because they didn't bring bread and water to the Jewish people. But only it's the men who would be the way for the men to come out with bread and water and bring that to this nation that's coming through, because it would not be tznius, it would not be modest for the women to come out to bring bread and water. And therefore, you can't blame the women. So the reason why the Moab people are banned from joining the Jewish people is a reason that only implicates the men. The men didn't do what they were supposed to do, which is bring out bread and water. But you can't blame the women, and therefore the women could join the Jewish people. To which Doeg said back to Avner, the men are implicated because they should have brought bread and water to the men. The women are implicated because they should have brought bread and water to the women, which would have been tznius, that would have been modest. And since they did not do so, they are just as implicated as the men. They are also, they lack gratitude, and they did not do chesed, and therefore they are also banned from joining the Jewish people. That was the debate. In the end, the Gemara says that they had a mesorah, they had a tradition from Shmuel, who had a mesorah all the way back to Moshe Rabbeinu, that it is Moavi, velo Moavis, it is only the males who are banned, but not the females. So the Gemara says, okay, fine, we accept that. It's the males, not the females. Therefore, David is acceptable, the Jewish people. But what about Doeg's point? Isn't Doeg correct? Torah says that they didn't bring out bread and water. And the men are blamed for not bringing out bread and water to the men, but the women should also be blamed for not bringing out bread and water to the women. To which the Gemara answers, as we had a few weeks ago in the Parsha, the Gemara answers that it says that when the angels came to visit Avraham Avinu, and they said, where is Sarah? Vayomer hinei va'ohel, she's in the tent. Which means that there's an extra measure of modesty that is demanded of the Jewish women, and that extra level of modesty would demand that the women do not bring out bread and water even to the women. That would also have been a lack of tznius, that would have been a lack of modesty to come out in full view, even if they're just bringing the bread and water to the women and not to the men. And the Gemara says the other pasuk as well, kol kvuda bas melech penima, all of the honor of the daughter of a king is penima, is internal, not external. And so, therefore, they cannot be implicated for not bringing bread and water to the women, because that still would have been a breach in tznius, in modesty, for a Jewish woman. Which means that bringing the bread and water to women, might be appropriate for non-Jewish women. Maybe that's an appropriate level of tznius for them. But for the Jewish women, that is a breach in tznius, in modesty. Therefore, you cannot blame the Moavi women for wanting to have this extra level of tznius, and therefore they're not banned from the Jewish people. And that is the way the Gemara concludes. And therefore, what follows is the following. You have to follow the thread. The men who do not, it would not be a breach in Tznius for the men to bring bread and water out. Therefore, the fact that they didn't shows that the men are they lack gratitude and they lack chesed. They're very selfish. They're not people who are out to do for other people. They're selfish. But the women, because it would have been a breach in Tznius, it would have been a breach in modesty, therefore, the fact that they didn't bring up bread and water does not show anything about their selfishness, whether they are or aren't selfish. Therefore, you can't blame them. The men are clearly selfish, much too selfish to be considered to be joining the Jewish people, but the women, you have no proof that they are selfish, and therefore they can join the Jewish people. Now, you don't see from here that the women of Moab are capable of chesed. Maybe they are selfish. You don't see one way or another. Meaning this episode doesn't prove that they are selfish, but it also doesn't prove that they're not selfish. You just don't know. Because of modesty, they stayed inside. It's when Rus comes along later in the Megillas Rus, and you find there the incredible chesed that Rus demonstrates, both towards her mother-in-law Naomi and towards Boaz, all of the chesed that she does, there you see that the Moabi women are capable of chesed, that they really can be selfless. And therefore, the Moabi women are both, can be tsanua, they can be modest, and they can also be selfless, they can also have a great level of chesed. And so therefore, when Rus comes along, she's the one who joins the Jewish people. Now, Doeg, who said that the women should have come out but didn't, he's saying two things. He's saying, first of all, that there is no extra measure of tznius, of modesty. That's number one. And therefore, they should have come out. They should have brought to the women. And the fact that they didn't shows that they're selfish, just like the men. The fact that they didn't shows that they're selfish. So the women didn't, they're also selfish. And they're so selfish, they cannot join the Jewish people. That was Doeg's interpretation. He was wrong, but that was his interpretation. So this debate of whether the women are banned or not revolves around two characteristics. One, is there an extra measure of tznius, of modesty, that's demanded of women, number one. And number two, the fact that they didn't bring out bread and water, does that show that they are selfish? So Doeg would say, they're selfish people. But we rule they're not selfish. Now, if you say they're selfish people, how would Doeg deal with Rus? Rus demonstrates all of this chesed. So Doeg would have to interpret Rus's actions as not being so altruistic, not being so selfless. That what appears to really be chesed perhaps wasn't chesed. Maybe she really had her own plans in mind. She was looking for another husband. Whatever you want to say would sully the actions of Rus and drag them down and not make them so great. That's what Doeg would have to say. But of course, he's wrong. Rus was altruistic and she was selfless, and therefore she joined the Jewish people. Arpa does not join the Jewish people. Arpa turns back. Now, Arpa turning back means that she never demonstrates this level of chesed. She doesn't do it. Arpa was not as much of a baalas chesed. She was not selfless like Rus. She could not give of herself the way Rus could for her mother-in-law. She was more interested in herself and couldn't do it. And that's why when she falls, as we mentioned, I believe, last week, that's why that evening when she turns away from the Jewish people, she falls very far. And there she becomes incredibly promiscuous. and is involved, as the Gemara says, with 100 men and a dog that night. The lack of performing the chesed leads to a very great breach in modesty, because the two things go together over here. That the modesty of the women implies a chance for chesed with Rus, whereas the lack of chesed in Arpa leads to a breach in modesty. The two things go together.
Is it the same for Naama?
Well, Naama is Jewish. I mean, Naama comes from Yehuda.
Naama
later. We don't know much about Naama. We don't know that much about her. We don't have much information.
She's from Amma, right?
Yeah, she's from Amma, right. We don't know much about her. We don't have much information.
What is the connect? Why does that have to be?
It doesn't have to be.
They
can go together, but it doesn't have to go together. The reason why it would go together is because if you want to connect the two, is because the what modesty is, what tznius really is that a person has a talent or a strength. We often associate tznius with appearance, but it could be with anything. It doesn't have to be just appearance. It could be a talent, it could be whatever it is. And when a person says, this talent, this strength that I have is not to display, it is rather to be used only when Hashem demands it of me, that means the person is not thinking of themselves, they're thinking about using it for Hashem. If I have a talent, I have a wonderful voice, and therefore I need to show everybody what kind of great voice I have, so then it's for me. I'm not doing it for Hashem, I'm doing it for me. Whereas if I reserve it for only when Hashem wants me to use it, then I can say I'm doing it for Hashem. So the when a person is selfless, both in terms of Hashem and in terms of other people, that becomes chesed. I'm selfless, which means I give to other people. Towards Hashem, selfless means I don't try to elevate my own stature or standing. I only do things to elevate Hashem's, kiviyachol, his stature, his kavod in this world. That's how you'd put the two together. So therefore, what we have is two different views on Rus, two different views on Moav, two different views really on David. Now, David goes out and fights Goliath and defeats him. Now, we know that David did it, and the Pasuk tells us that he tells Goliath, you're coming with the strength of man, I come with the strength of Hashem. And David gave himself over completely to Hashem. We know that David is the quintessential Eved Hashem. He gives over everything to Hashem. We know that's the case. Doeg saw David defeat Goliath, which is Rus defeating Arpa. But just as Doeg interprets Rus's actions as not being altruistic, he would also interpret David's actions as being not altruistic. And he would interpret David's actions as being a way of elevating himself. Look at my strength. I can defeat the giant. I can beat Goliath. Look how great I am. That's how Doeg would interpret David's actions, because Doeg's view on things is that David comes from Rus, who comes from Moab, who are selfish and are not modest and don't care about chesed, etc. That's the way he interprets it. So he would look at David defeating Goliath as one evil defeating another evil. You got two things that are bad, and one overcame the other one. But it's not good over evil. We, of course, understand it's good over evil. It's David who is selfless, who is a Baal Chesed. And as we know, I've told this to you before, Malchus is Chesed. Malchus is the attribute of royalty is that of chesed, because the king's job is to ensure the well-being of the people, the physical well-being of the people. And the king, therefore, his job is to be a Baal Chesed. That's what he's supposed to be doing. Now, Shaul is chasing after David HaMelech. And David comes to Nov, the city of the Kohanim. And there, the Kohen Gadol, Achimatz, gives David, he gives him he's David he's in a very bad way. He could die without getting food, and he gives him lechem apanim. He gives him the showbread to eat, and he also gives him a weapon. He gives him Goliath's sword. Now we know that the Kohen Gadol did it altruistically, because the Kohen Gadol assumed that David was on a mission from the king, and he tried to help as much as he could. But Doeg was there and saw what happened. And Doeg spoke Lashon Hara and told Shaul about it. And they called the Kohanim in, and the Kohen Gadol said, I did this altruistically. I did it for the right reasons. And Shaul says, no, you knew that David was a traitor, and you helped him in order to help a traitor. That's an interpretation of an action. Doeg interpreted, and Shaul then followed suit, interpreted the actions of the Kohanim as being traitorous because they were helping somebody who was really a traitor against the king. If the Kohen Gadol and the Kohanim knew about David running from the king, then it was an act of treachery. If they didn't know, then it was an act of chesed. They were helping. They were trying to be good citizens and helping out. So here again, because David must be evil, therefore, if he was able to get away because of Nov, because of the Kohanim, then the Kohanim must be evil. It must be. It can't be otherwise. Because Hashem wouldn't allow tzaddikim to help an evil person. And therefore, it can't be they didn't know about it. They must have known, and therefore they are evil and they deserve to be killed. And it is that rationale which leads Shaul to command the slaughter of the city. And Doeg is the one who carries it out. And that's why Doeg loses his chelek in Olam Haba, his portion of the world to come, and Shaul is killed with his three sons. David, as we learned last week, blames himself partially for what happened, because he saw Doeg there, and yet he still allowed them to help him. Therefore, what we said last week, I mean, it's hard to blame David. He had to save his own life. He was running away. What is he supposed to do? So we understood. It's David on his level, on his madrega, so he's held to a very, very high standard. But what is that high standard? What did he do wrong? And the answer is that what David did wrong, again, we're talking about on his lofty level, is there was a slight degree of selfishness, meaning he was saving his own skin. Now, that's not really being selfish. You're supposed to save your own skin. You're supposed to protect yourself, especially David, who's the future king of the Jewish people. But knowing that Doeg was there, and realizing that there was, David, of course, never envisioned that the city would be wiped out. But he did know that there was a possibility, although he felt it was very remote, but there was a possibility that they would get in trouble for helping him, that they would have to explain themselves, maybe they'd get a slap on the wrist. They didn't, of course, didn't expect this to happen. But because he was willing to get himself saved, knowing that there might be a slight implication that would hurt the people of Nov, therefore in his madrega, he is blamed. And therefore, as we learned last week, there is a punishment that comes to David, a horrific punishment. Either he'll be killed or his future family members will be killed. And that is in fact what happens, as we learned last week with the whole story with Yishbi ben Nov. When David, even the slightest demonstration of selfishness enters David, he's crossing over to the Arpa side of things. Rather than being on the Rus side, which is selflessness, he's crossing ever so slightly into the Arpa side, the Doeg interpretation side, the selfishness. And therefore, the story we learned last week pits David against Yishbi Benov, against Goliath's brother, one of Arpa's sons. And it is in this episode that Avishai ben Tzruya comes to save him, and Arpa is killed in this episode, because it is within this episode that David does teshuva, and he repents for what he did wrong. But there still is, as I mentioned to you last week, that as long as David's family is demonstrating the remorse for what went wrong with Nov, as long as David's family is demonstrating tikkun, they're fixing up what went wrong with Nov, then they are protected from any consequences. But once you get to the first descendants of David HaMelech, who really are behaving horribly, who have joined Achav's family, who are not acting with Avodas Hashem, now that gives rise to this terrible implication of now having to atone for what happened with Nov. That's how we explained last week. When Balak brought the karbanos, so he was doing something for a bad reason. It was to curse the Jewish people. On the other hand, it was karbanos to Hashem. So Chazal say, within the karbanos of Balak, it's mostly bad, but there is some good. And therefore, from the good part of it comes Rus, which comes David and Shlomo, who bring many karbanos to Hashem. From the bad part of it, there would try to be a curse, which Hashem turned into a bracha, but there still was something there, and that leads to these 42 people who are killed by the bears. How does the bad of Balak's karbanos line up with these 42 people? So Chazal tell us, who were these people anyway? Why were they upset with Elisha that they called him names? So Chazal tell us, these people were the ones who brought water to Yericho when the water was dangerous. The water had been bad for Yericho, and therefore they needed to ship in bottled water. Who brought the bottled water? These 42 young men. Their jobs, their livelihood was that they would bring bottled water, fresh water, to the people of Yericho. When they complained to Elisha, the people of Yericho, and Elisha threw salt in and fixed the water, that's great. But these people lost their livelihood. So now they had no jobs. So when they saw Elisha, they made fun of him. They put him down. Now let's think about that for a minute. They have 42 men, and they have a job. There's a city that has dangerous water. People drink the water, they get sick, they die. It's very dangerous. People have been hurt. There have been fatalities for drinking this water. So they say, okay, we're going to bring water for pay, but we're going to bring water to the people. Now, why are they doing it? Are they doing it because the people need water? We also need a livelihood, but the people need water. So if they need water, we'll bring them water. But the main reason is to help the people. Or are they doing it because they want to pad their pockets? We need money. Here's a great opportunity for money. The litmus test is, what happens when the water is healed? When there's no longer a need, which is objectively speaking a good thing. If these people, these 42 people, are people who are interested in the welfare of other people, if they have some degree of selflessness, then their reaction is, okay, we're sorry we lost our jobs, but we're happy that nobody's going to be sick anymore. The water's drinkable. The water's usable. We're happy about that. We'll have to find another job. If they are selfish people, then all they can think about is their own selves. And when the water is healed, that's a bad thing, because now we lost our jobs. That's the difference between a selfish person and someone who is not selfish. If they had a right to be worried about the fact they lost their jobs, they had a right to be concerned about it and wanting to know what to do, they could have gone to Elisha and said to him, you know, it's wonderful you fixed the water, but you know, we lost our jobs. What are we supposed to do now? Or, you know, if you can throw salt in the water and make the water better, maybe you can find us jobs. They could have done that. They could have gone to Elisha with humility and said to him, listen, we need help now. We appreciate what you did. It's wonderful. And I'm glad for the people of Yericho, but what are we supposed to do? That would have been very appropriate. Nothing wrong with that. But instead, all they can think about is, this man ruined our livelihood. He took away the need. And that's terrible. And therefore, they put him down. So, Balak's karbonos, which the bad part of the karbonos is that it was a selfish thing, where it demonstrated a lack of hakaras hatov, a lack of gratitude to the Jewish people, not bringing bread and water, and on top of that, hiring Bilam to curse the Jewish people. It's all the bad of Moab is wrapped up in these karbonos. That bad does find expression in cursing the Jewish people and hurting the Jewish people when? When you have 42 men, one man per karbon, who acts in the ways of Moab selfishly, and they get cursed by Elisha. And therefore, the original intent of the karbonos, which was to bring about a curse, finally finds expression here, and the 42 men are killed. The good part of the karbonos, the fact that it was karbonos to Hashem, that finds expression with Rus. So it's the same idea that you have two strains, two lines. The good, which is represented by Rus, the bad, which is represented by Arpa, but also the bad of Moab, that they don't have gratitude, they're selfish. They hire Bilam to curse the Jewish people. That finds expression in the death of these 42 young men. And the number 42, when Yehu kills the either nephews or brothers of Ahaziahu, that's the destruction of David's family. It's happening here. Why is it happening here? Because it is here when the family of David is no longer behaving in a manner that demonstrates that they regret the acts of Nov. They are now acting in a manner that supports the destruction of Nov, where they are acting in a manner that is antithetical to the Jewish people, antithetical to the Kohanim, antithetical towards Hashem. That's finally where these consequences now strike David HaMelech's family. But the Navi emphasizes to us how many brothers or nephews of Ahaziah were killed? 42, because that's the number of the karbonos of Balak. And here it finds expression within David's family itself to be wiped out. And so we now have brought together the behavior of Moab and the behavior, the debate over Moavi, Velo Moavis, Moavi Vafilu Moavis, that debate. We've brought that together. We've demonstrated how that debate leads to two different approaches and two different understandings, and how the men of Moab, they represent the selfishness, the lack of gratitude, and the hiring of Bilam to boot. All of that, that's represented in the men of Moab, while the women of Moab, represented by Rus, in fact demonstrate tznius, modesty, and in Rus you see chesed, you see kindness, you see selflessness. Just the opposite. Therefore, the women are in, the men are out. But that strain of Moab, the bad part, does find expression in the 42 men killed by Elisha, and later on, the 42 nephews or brothers of Ahaziah. And this is David HaMelech's struggle with Yishbi Benov, and the fact that whether David slightly demonstrated a lack of selflessness with Nov, and the city was destroyed. And so that's what we have over here. Now, we have many other parts to this. We still have the fact that Elisha killed these 42 men. And that's going to tie into a prophecy, which we've talked about several times, that Eliyahu got, that Elisha was going to destroy some of the Jewish people. We now have to tie in the events that actually deal with the destruction of both the northern and southern kingdoms right over here. And we're going to do that. But the point that you have to keep in mind through the next several weeks is we're constantly going to be showing this contrast between selfishness and selflessness. That's going to be the two parts of it. Selfishness is what destroyed Nov, and that's what Hashem is coming to demand retribution for. That Nov were in fact selfless, but they were wiped out for being blamed for being selfish. And Hashem is not tolerating that, and therefore there's a lot of retribution. And that selfishness of Doeg reflects the selfishness of Moav. And that also is seen in Arpah and in her descendants. Whereas the selflessness of the women, there you find it in Rus and in her descendants, which is David, who really is selfless and really does, in fact, project that selflessness of his great-grandmother of Rus. That's what we're going to constantly be showing over here. So this is part two of bringing things together. We still have, can't tell you yet how many parts, but we have several more parts to go before we're going to leave this.
Is this the last time we have 42, or does the number come up again later?
This is all I know, but there's one more 42, but it's a little bit, we had it before, where there was a number 42, which it said that he was 42 years old when he really wasn't 42 years old. We explained where that number came from. But that was a little bit too complex to bring in tonight.
Wow.
Do we know why Balak brought 42 Korbanos? What was the significance of that?
Why did he say that originally? I don't know. I mean, it's the number 7 over and over again. Yeah. Usually it's 7 times 7, which is 49. It becomes the numbers. I don't know why 7 times 6 over here. 42, I don't know.
And why would Moab owe Bnei Israel gratitude?
Because Moab, Lot was only saved because of Avraham Avinu. Yeah.
If David had not taken the bread, nothing was going to happen. If he had enough Amunah that God would feed him.
What are you supposed to do?
I mean, you have to be very careful. David is on a huge level, and he did what any of us would have done, which is sought help. He never expected that this is what would happen. He didn't know that anything would happen to them, but he was, even if something would have happened, he wasn't expecting death and destruction.
What was Doeg's personality? What was his background?
Well, remember, Doeg was at one time a great Talmud Chacham. He fell precipitously. But he spoke Lashon Hara. That was the main issue over there.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.